Hello, everybody. This is a talk through of Exam 3, Microeconomics, which was given in the 15th week, Spring 2008. Question 1. The law of demand states everything else unchanged. The correct answer, that consumers will buy more of a good if its price falls. Now, you probably were tempted to use the answer that demand rises as price falls. You know, if price goes down, people are going to buy more. But do you remember when we discussed demand versus quantity demanded? And we discussed the fact that from the point of view of an economist, a change in demand is a shift of the demand curve. And when price falls, of course people buy more, but that is called an increase in quantity demanded. So the best answer is definitely not that one. Question 2. If rent controls for apartments were established in Austin below the present going rental rates, we could expect. Now, to do this one, draw yourself a supply and demand curve diagram. And then draw a horizontal line for the price, which would be the rental rate, and have it be below the point where the two curves cross, horizontal line below. And you'll see that that horizontal line, that the quantity demanded is larger than the quantity supplied at that price. There is therefore an excess of demand compared to the quantity supplied. There is a shortage of apartments. So the correct answer, a shortage in apartments to develop. Question 3. Officials at City Bus Corporation increased fares, prices last year, and were surprised to find that total revenue fell that year instead of increasing as expected. This tells us what? Okay, the first thing is, you have to realize that the fare is the price of a bus ride, okay? And revenue comes from selling bus rides. There is a demand for bus rides, and it depends on the price of bus rides. So the higher the price, the smaller the number of people going to want to buy bus rides and so on. Or if lower the price, lower the fare, then the quantity demanded will increase. Now, revenue is price times quantity. And when you cut the price, you'll remember that that reduces revenue, but on the other hand, the decline in price itself tends to reduce revenue, but on the other hand, cutting the price increases the quantity of rides, and that tends to increase revenue. And we learned that if you increase the fares, which tends to increase revenue, then, but if you find that revenue actually fell, well, then it must be that the decline in quantity was larger than the percent increase in price. Now, elasticity is defined as the percent change in quantity divided by the percent change in price that causes it. And so now we're going to increase the price by such and so, that goes in the denominator. And the percent change in quantity is going to be a decline which is larger than the increase. So you can see that the demand for bus rides must be elastic. Or put intuitively, if you increase the price, if there's such a huge decline in riders that revenue actually falls, that's only possible if quantity is very responsive, therefore demand is very elastic. So the correct answer, the demand for bus rides is price elastic. Question 4. A monopolist, just like any other business, and the correct answer is, will price its product so that marginal cost equals marginal revenue. Now, a lot of you missed that question, and that is one of the crucial ideas from this course. One of the crucial ideas, any firm whether it's a monopolist, whether it's a competitive firm, any firm, if it wants to choose the correct output level, must choose the output level at which marginal cost equals marginal revenue. The details may vary. I mean, exactly what is the slope of the marginal revenue curve? What is the exact shape of the marginal cost curve? In the short run, the marginal cost curve may be steep. In the long run, flatter. The demand curve, in a monopoly, the demand curve is downward sloping. But in a competitive industry, each firm believes its demand curve is a horizontal line, so therefore the marginal revenue curve is horizontal also. These are details which are in your notes, but nonetheless, every business finds a output level and a price which result in marginal cost equaling marginal revenue. Always the first thing is, find the point where the marginal cost curve crosses the marginal revenue curve. Read down from that point to find the quantity. Read up from that point to the demand curve, and then go horizontally over to find the price. Question 5. Select the best answer. The fundamental theorem of welfare economics tells us roughly, and the correct answer is, that an economic system with many buyers and many sellers in all markets will be maximally efficient. One of the important ideas to learn about economic systems is that there is a huge range of details of how you can organize an economic system. But one of the important consequences of the way the choices you make and how to organize it are how efficient it is. That is to say, how big a pie is created by the economy. I mean, how many goods are produced. And the fundamental theorem tells us that if you have competitive markets, many sellers and many buyers in all markets, then the economy is going to produce the largest possible quantity of goods. And there is no other economic system that can do better. It may be that some other economic system can do just as well, but no system can do better. So the correct answer is that an economic system with many buyers and many sellers in all markets will be maximally efficient. Question 6. Green Tree Corporation sells live Christmas trees. It observes that when it decreases the price of Christmas trees by 10%, revenue rises by 25%. The demand for Christmas trees must be, and then their choices of perfectly elastic, unit elastic, inelastic, or elastic. Well, the important thing about elasticity that we learned is that if a demand curve is inelastic, when you change the price, quantity doesn't change very much. If it's elastic, then when you change the price, quantity demanded changes by quite a lot. Now, we also know that if you increase the price, that tends to increase revenue, except what if quantity declines when you increase the price, okay? Well, you put those two ideas together, and you realize that here we're going to decrease the price by 10%. That's going to cause revenue to go down if demand is inelastic. But revenue actually rose by 25%. Therefore, when you cut the price, which would tend to reduce revenue, the quantity must have increased by so much that revenue actually rose. And so we know that the demand is elastic, and that's the correct answer. Now, question 7. The price elasticity of demand for a good or service of 2.5 tells us what? Well, when you see that kind of a question, you need to plug that elasticity into the definition of elasticity. Remember the formula. The elasticity of demand equals the percent change in quantity divided by the percent change in price, which caused that percent change in quantity. Now, the elasticity of demand is 2.5. Well, it's actually minus 2.5, isn't it? We know that when we plug into that demand elasticity formula, demand is a minus number, so we put minus 2.5 equals, and then a percent change in quantity divided by a percent change in price. We'll look at some of these possible answers. One possible answer, quantity demanded decreases by 2.5. Well, in that case, for percent change in quantity, we'll put minus 2.5. When price rises by 1% for the percent change in price, we'll put plus 1. So we have minus 2.5 over plus 1. That equals minus 2.5. Yes, that is the price elasticity of demand of 2.5 as specified in the question. So that answer is correct. Now, some of these other answers, you can see why each one might be wrong. One answer that's wrong, the price rises by 2.5% when the quantity demanded falls by 1%. Well, there, the quantity demanded falls by 1%, so you'll put a minus 1 on the top, and price rises by 2.5, so you put plus 2.5 on the bottom, 1 divided by plus 2.5, and the elasticity is even smaller than minus a half. It's not equal to 2.5. It's equal to less than a half. So that one's clearly wrong. Now the other two possible answers, quantity demanded falls by 2.5 units and price changes by $1, or price changes by $2.50 when quantity changes by 1 unit. Well, neither of those answers are any good because those are not in percent. And the elasticity formula requires percent change in price and percent change in quantity be in percent. All right, now question 8. Suppose the price elasticity of supply equals 2. Then a 10% increase in price would do what to the quantity supplied? All right, again, we need to start from the definition of the price elasticity of supply. It equals percent change in quantity divided by the percent change in price which caused it. And the price elasticity of supply is 2, so we have 2 equals percent change in quantity divided by percent change in price. And the percent change in price is plus 10, so we have 2 equals percent change in quantity divided by 10. We solve that problem for the percent change in quantity, and when we do that, we get the answer plus 20. So a 20% increase in quantity supplied is the correct answer. Quite a few people missed that question, so be pleased if you got it right. Question 9. Along a straight line demand curve, and the correct answer, and then slope, and then there's a blank, and elasticity, and then there's a blank, as price declines. Okay, we're going down a straight line demand curve, lowering the price. Well, along the straight line demand curve, the slope is the same everywhere, so the slope remains the same as you go down it. Well, that tells you what the answer is, because there's no answer that has the slope remains the same except one answer. But also, as you move down a straight line demand curve, we know that the elasticity, which starts off very negative, like minus infinity up at the top, minus a million, it gets smaller and smaller, closer and closer to zero until it gets to zero as you slide down the curve. So the elasticity declines. So that's the correct answer. The answer which says remains the same, comma, declines. Now notice that several of these questions have to do with elasticity. If you're having trouble with the elasticity questions, review the elasticity handout. and review the chapter on elasticity. And if you have trouble understanding all of that, then I suggest that you go to my website and take a look at listen to the lectures on elasticity. There are some lectures there, and I believe there's even a set of slides to go along with those lectures. All right, now, question 10 refers to a diagram that's just above it, actually on the previous page. Question 10 says, refer to the graph above. Elasticity is greatest at point, and then the choices A, point B, point C, or that elasticity is the same everywhere. Now, this problem, again, you want to start from the definition of elasticity of supply, which is percent change in quantity divided by percent change in price. Now, we need to use the other version of the elasticity definition, which is delta Q over Q divided by delta P over P. And then we have to manipulate that so that it becomes delta Q over delta P. I mean, when you have two fractions, you can invert and multiply, so I do that, and I end up with delta Q over delta P times P times Q. Now, delta Q over delta P is not the slope, because the slope is delta P over delta Q, but the slope is constant along that curve, so delta Q over delta P also is constant along that curve. However, you can see that as you slide up that curve, P rises faster than Q. So, for example, you start off with price equal to zero at point C, price equals zero, and quantity equals two, and then if price goes up well, if you double the quantity going from 2 to 4, you're going to more than double the price, because the price is starting at 0, so the price is going to more than double. So that the ratio P over Q is going to be getting larger as you move up that curve. I consider that to be quite a hard question. The correct answer is that point A is the point where the elasticity is greatest. Question 11. Monopolistic competition is a market structure in which many firms sell differentiated products. You can look up monopolistic competition in the index, and you'll find a perfectly clear discussion. There's no reason why you can't get questions like that correct on the next exam. It's just a matter of studying the definitions in the book. Spend the time and you'll get the results. Question 12. Monopolistically competitive firms, and the correct answer is, earn zero economic profits in the long run. Again, monopolistic competition is a type of market that you must be familiar with, partly because it's one of the most common types of markets that we encounter in the real world. There are competitive markets, like the wheat market, and there are monopolistic markets, like the electricity market in Austin. But a large number of markets take the form of a large number of products which are very similar in many ways but have features which differ. For example, the computer market or the automobile market, and so on. So I strongly urge you to review the chapters on different types of markets and focus especially on monopolistic competition. All right, question 13. Oh, and the correct answer for question 12 is monopolistic competitive firms earn zero economic profits in the long run. What happens is they get a temporary monopoly when they invent a new feature. But then other firms enter the business and copy them, and profits tends to be driven away by the forces of competition. It's still worth doing that by having a big research and development effort inside the firm. But you have to pay for all of the unsuccessful research and development with those few successful products, and if it is profitable to do it, then the firms increase the quantity of research that they do, and therefore that creates more features and drives down the profitability of inventing new features. Question 13. Refer to the graph above. Given that the demand curve is A, the marginal revenue curve facing this monopolist is... All right. To get this one right, you can take a look at the marginal revenue handout if you want. But we discussed this very thoroughly in class and repeated it at least three times, probably more. The way you find the marginal revenue curve, if you have the demand curve, you draw the demand curve, you extend it all the way up to the vertical axis, all the way down to the horizontal axis, and then you take the horizontal distance to that demand curve where it crosses the horizontal axis, you cut that distance in half and make a mark. And then you take the vertical intercept of the demand curve and make another mark, and then you run a line between those two. And that is the marginal revenue curve. And the correct answer is whichever answer gives you the line C in the diagram. Because that line is halfway between A and the point of origin along the horizontal axis. Question 14. Natural monopoly exists when one firm can supply the entire output demanded at, and the correct answer is, at a lower cost than two or more firms. The idea of a natural monopoly is that in certain markets, if you have more than one firm that are sharing the job of production, and each are producing half, the smaller firms are very inefficient. It's cheaper to have one large firm producing the total for the market rather than two small firms producing the total. And if so, then a monopoly may be more efficient than competition, which might cause there to be two or more firms. And such a situation is called a natural monopoly. Now, if you want to know more about natural monopoly, take a look at page 286 for a definition. Question 15. Refer to the graph above. If this monopolist were allowed to choose the profit-maximizing level of output, it would produce how much? Now, to answer this question, again, all you have to remember is that crucial idea that's true in all markets. To find the output level and the price, find the point where the marginal cost curve crosses the marginal revenue curve Read straight down to find the quantity, read up to the demand curve, and then over horizontally to find the price. And if you do that in the diagram that's given there, you can see that the correct output level is 300 units of output. If instead I'd asked for the price, the correct answer would have been what? You go from that point all the way up to the demand curve and over, and then you can see that the correct price would have been $2.40. But I don't ask for the price, I only ask for the quantity. All right, question 16. Which of these answers is it? Well, question 16. Blank is an example of a legal monopoly. The correct answer is a patent. A patent is an example of a legal monopoly. In the chapter on monopoly, you will have a discussion of, the pros and cons of monopoly. And the fact is that we reward firms a patent for inventing. We reward inventors with a patent, which is basically a right to have a monopoly to the profits on their product, on their invention, for I think it's 17 years. These are discussed on page 283 and page 289. So you can read more about patents on those pages. Question 17. Having government buy patent rights has been suggested as an alternative to regulating the price charged by a patent-holding monopolist. The major benefit of this approach is, and the correct answer is, it would maintain the incentive for companies to engage in research and development. Now, if you think about the problem of getting inventions to occur, we know that monopoly is inefficient, in that a monopolistic firm charges a higher price than they really need to, given the cost of producing the good. And society might be better off if the good were produced in a competitive market. But on the other hand, society is better off to have the invention than not have the invention. So the question is how to reward the inventors in proportion to the value of their invention. And if the government purchased their patent, then they could then let people use it for free. Imagine what would happen in the case of the AIDS drugs. If the government purchased the patent and then said, anyone can produce AIDS drugs who wants to. It's very inexpensive to produce the AIDS drugs. What's happening is that there are monopolies on AIDS drugs. So this would be a way of continuing to encourage inventions, because the inventors would be able to sell their patents, and at the same time would let the economy and society move ahead and produce these goods at a lower price. Question 18. A market structure in which there are a few firms that engage in strategic pricing is called what? And the correct answer is oligopoly. Oligopoly is a peculiar kind of market structure which is difficult for economists to analyze. And there are a couple of different models which are used in thinking about oligopoly. I just encourage you to do the necessary reading and review in the chapter on oligopoly and other sort of peculiar market structures. Question 19. Price discrimination occurs when? What is price discrimination? Well, look on page 285 of this text. Price discrimination occurs when, and the correct answer is, when buyers are divided into two or more groups, each paying a different price. Now, that's the best answer. That answer is a little bit oversimplified because there are reasons why a firm might charge different people different prices, which are not evidence of price discrimination. For example, I might charge you a higher price for a vacuum cleaner if you live in Australia, because I have to ship it all the way to Australia. And so my customers in Australia would be paying a higher price. But that's not evidence of price discrimination, because the difference in price reflects differences in costs of delivering the product to my customers. So, but it is, differences in price are evidence of price discrimination when you're selling products to two or more different customers, and the cost of delivering the products are essentially the same, and even so you're charging them different prices. So, for example, it's price discrimination if you and I go to the movies together, we sit side by side in equally good seats, but I have to pay $8 because I'm an adult and you have to pay $5.50 because you're a student. That's price discrimination, unless there's something about old fogies like me that maybe we're more destructive, we do more damage, we destroy the seats or something, and that's why they have to charge us extra. That's not the way it really is, and therefore we know that it's price discrimination. But by the way, what about the fact that the movie theaters will charge you a lower price if you go to the matinee than if you go to the movie in the evening? Is that evidence of price discrimination? And the answer is no, that would not be. Because it costs less to deliver the service in the afternoon. You see that huge empty theater? It's not there for the afternoon customers. It's there for the evening customers on Friday and Saturday nights for the blockbusters, for the big movies, for opening night, and for the very popular movies. And therefore, it makes perfect sense to let people who are willing to go to the movies in the afternoon, let them pay a lower price. Different costs of delivering the product. Well, enough on price discrimination. Now, question 20, cartels. The page reference for cartels is page 309 for this question. Cartels are organizations that seek to, and the correct answer is, limit output in order to raise product price. Put another way, cartels are an attempt by a group of firms to behave like a monopolist. That's what monopolists do, isn't it? They limit output in order to raise product price. But if you've got many firms or several firms in the industry, then they have to work together. They have to create an organization to limit the output in order to raise the product price. All right, question 21. A lot of students missed this one. I considered it to be It was on there as a very hard question. I'll read the question and then I'll discuss it a bit. A firm produces electric motors. Here is the data for the resources the firm purchases. The price of rotors is $2 per rotor, and the marginal product of rotors is one motor per rotor. The salary of electricians is $20 per hour, and the marginal product of electricians is 10 motors per hour of work. Also, the marginal product of an extra dollar spent on pencils is 3 motors per dollar spent. And then you're supposed to evaluate even each of the following statements and choose the best answer. And then the statements are whatever dollars the firm is spending, it should decrease the portion spent on pencils and increase the portion spent on rotors or electricians. Or this data proves the firm is not a well-run firm. Okay, so we have two statements. We have to decide whether each one is true or false. Now, to do this, you had to be present for the lecture that I gave where I related consumer theory to the theory of the firm. When we discussed consumer theory, we came up with these equations for a efficient consumer, a welfare-maximizing consumer. We said that if you're going to be a successful consumer, you must allocate your budget so that the marginal product of each item in your budget divided by its price, or the marginal utility of each item divided by its price, is equal to the same ratio for every other good which is in your budget. And I pointed out that all of those ratios are equal to the marginal utility of a dollar. Now, the same equation I pointed out exists for the theory of the firm, but the marginal utility is replaced by the marginal product. And instead of these being goods which are used to produce utility, they are goods which are used to produce the good of the firm. This particular firm produces electric motors, and the inputs are the various resources which are used to produce the electric motors, such as the rotors and the electricians and so on. Well, with that in mind, we have a set of equations for the well-run firm, which are exactly correspondent to the equations for the well-run consumer. We have the marginal product of rotors divided by the price of rotors should equal the marginal product of electricians divided by the price of electricians, and that should equal the marginal product of an extra dollar spent on production. And that ratio, the price of rotors, the marginal product of rotors divided by the price of rotors, that ratio is the marginal product of a dollar spent on that resource. Well, if you take the marginal product of rotors, that's equal to 1, divide by the price of rotors, that's equal to 2, you have 1 over 2. If you take the marginal product of electricians, that's 10, and divide by the salary of electricians, that's $20, you have 10 over 20, or 1 over 2. If you take but the marginal product of an extra dollar spent on pencils, that's the marginal product of a dollar spent on pencils, that is 3 motors per dollar spent. That number is different. And therefore, this is not a well-run firm. Because a well-run firm, all those ratios would be identical. So, the correct answer is A. Only statement 2 is true. Now, if this firm increases the number of dollars it spends on pencils, each extra dollar is going to produce 3 extra motors. And if it pulls dollars out of any of the others, it's going to, when it pulls out one of those dollars, it's only going to lose a half a motor. So you can see that it should be increasing the portion spent on pencils, not decreasing. Now, I made it be pencils because I wanted to confuse you, because it's hard to see how increasing the number of pencils that a firm buys is going to increase the number of motors. But in lecture, I went over that kind of problem. I used toilet paper as an example. I mean, sometimes it's not easy to see where the marginal product comes from, but the fact is that if you don't have enough pencils, your firm is not going to be as productive in producing electric motors as it will be if you do have enough pencils. All right, so the correct answer, only statement 2 is true. Question 22, refer to the graph above. Suppose that suppliers restrict output to OL. What area represents the welfare loss to society? Well, this to answer this problem, you had to be present for the discussion of consumer surplus and producer surplus. These topics are also addressed in Chapter 7. But there was a creative leap that you needed to make in order to answer this problem correctly. Because in this problem, I don't explain to you that why the output has been restricted to OL. Is it because of a monopoly or because of a tax or whatever? But the important point is it doesn't matter why output is less than it should be. What's important is that it is less than it should be. And as a consequence, certain individuals are deprived of buying the product which has a high value to them and which could be produced by firms happily willing to produce it at a lower cost. And so surplus is lost. And the difference is and the surplus lost is the lost output valued at the difference between the seller's cost and what the buyer would have been willing to pay. And that makes the correct answer areas triangles B plus C. Question 23. A firm is making no profit. If there is X inefficiency, what can we conclude? The page references for X inefficiency are pages 324 to 26 and page 329. And the correct answer is that we can conclude the firm is operating less efficiently than economically possible. You should review what X inefficiency is, but I'll tell you basically. X inefficiency is the situation in which the managers of your business are not managing the business in a way which fully benefits the owners, but are managing it for the benefit of some other group, usually the managers themselves, at least to some extent. Therefore, they are not as efficient from the point of view of the owners, they're not as efficient. And if you can motivate the managers to manage the firm correctly, then your costs will be lower and you will be more efficient. Incidentally, I don't see how you can have X inefficiency in a competitive industry as long as there is some management method to get the managers to work properly, because the inefficient firms will be driven out of business by the efficient firms, wouldn't they? But that's neither here nor there. The correct answer, the firm is operating less efficiently than economically possible. Okay, question 24. Blank, is the market structure that economists believe to be the most dynamically efficient? And the answer given in the text is oligopoly. You may find this answer somewhat surprising. The argument basically given in the text is that in perfect competition, the firms are only earning a normal profit, and that profit is insufficient. I am not sure that I buy the argument. I only say that the answer given in the text is oligopoly. We did not discuss it in lecture, and so that is the best answer. Question 25. The U.S. economy is currently financing its trade deficit. How? Well, go back to our discussion, our lectures on international economics, or take a look at chapter 21. I urge you to read chapter 21, because on the final exam I will probably pick some questions out of chapter 21 on international economics. But the answer to this question is easy to determine if you just remember that the balance of payments always must balance to zero. But there can be imbalances in subaccounts, provided, for example, you can have a deficit in the trade account, provided that it is mirrored by a surplus in some other accounts. And if the U.S. economy is financing a trade deficit, it has a trade deficit, then it must have a surplus in some other account. And in our lectures, the other accounts there were only two goods. There were two things that could be traded internationally: goods and services, of course, on the one hand, and then capital on the other. And the trade deficit is goods and services, more being imported than exported, so we must be exporting something more than something else, more than we're importing, and the answer is claims. And claims are assets like stocks, bonds, and real estate. They're being exported and sold to foreign investors. So that's the correct answer. All the other answers are obviously wrong. So you can get that answer by a process of elimination. Question 26. All of the following are free trade associations except NATO. NATO is a defense organization. NAFTA, North American Free Trade Association. European Union, EU. So just review chapter 21, you'll get that question right. It may be different, but you know you need to know the names of these international organizations. Question 27, a lot of people missed it. It was one of the questions I put on, which I thought was going to be hard, except the people that really studied. It's in chapter 14 on page 326. The Robinson-Patman Act effectively made it illegal for many firms to, and the correct answer is, lower prices. That act was created in a time period in U.S. economic history in which some large businesses were driving small businesses out of business by charging very low prices inside the market area of those small businesses. The large business had market was selling all over a wide geographic area. And so they could afford to use the profits from those other areas to sell at a low price and operate at a loss inside the area until they drove this smaller business out of business. And the Robinson-Patman Act made it illegal to do that. Question 28. Susie has just finished her economics exam and must decide whether go home and just sit around, go to the sauna, have a couple of margaritas, or go to a movie. She can do one, all, none, or any two of these things. The question is, what should she do? And then the data, it doesn't cost anything to go home and just sit around. So it doesn't take any money. The marginal utility of the sauna is 40 utils and the price is $10. And we know that a well-run consumer, a welfare-maximizing consumer, will equalize the marginal utility of every good in their budget divided by the price of that good. That ratio will be the same for all goods in their budget. And so, if they're going to put going to the sauna in the budget, that would be 40 utils divided by 10, that equals 4. The margaritas, 45 utils for 2, and the price is $9 for 2, so 45 divided by 9, that's 5. And going to the movies gives 50 utils, and the price is 10, that's 50 divided by 10 equals 5. So those three ratios, 4, 5, and 5, all three are not the same. The sauna is lower than the other two. But also, the marginal utility of a dollar is 6. Now, we learned in our lecture on consumer theory, we learned that the marginal utility of goods in the budget divided by their prices comes out to a number which is the marginal utility of a dollar. And here it says that Susie's marginal utility of a dollar is 6. Well, wait a minute. The marginal utility of a dollar is 6. Marginal utility of spending a dollar on the sauna is only 4. Well, you shouldn't spend money on the sauna. You should reduce your budget on the sauna and put that money into whatever it is where you can get 6 units of utility for a dollar. And margaritas, same way, there, if you spend the money, you're going to get 5 utils. But to get the money, you'll lose 6 because the marginal utility of a dollar is 6. So in other words, there must be a bunch of other goods that this person is all, that Susie is also buying, which have a ratio of marginal utility divided by price equals 6. And Susie should spend on those things and not bother with any of those three things. So what Susie needs to do is just go home and chill and not spend money on any of those things. Correct answer, choose only A. Go home, just sit around. And that is the end of the exam.